KPFA listeners have been hearing a lot about the climate change talks in Copenhagen. There have been protests all over the world leading up to the talks.
We need to stop separating all the pieces of the problem out. It is not only an ecological problem, it is not only an economic problem, it is not only a social problem, it is all of them.
The United Nations Population Report for 2009 revealed that women are at the front lines of climate change. They are the majority of the world's small farmers, the majority of the world's poor, and when climate change forces families to flee their homes, women become refugees with their children. Further, the report concludes, women who lose their livelihoods because of climate change increasingly turn to prostitution and other dangerous work. A full schedule of gender-focused events has been organized in Copenhagen on topics from the false promise of nuclear power to women workers and green jobs. But these are side events, while the main conference has been slow to take up the gender issue. Policy analyst Anousheh Hossain says that this is partly because feminist organizations in the U.S. and elsewhere have not recognized climate change as a feminist issue. Kate Raphael talked with Anousheh about the change she wants to see.
Everyone's talking about climate change this week, with the talks going on in Copenhagen. A couple weeks ago, an article was published in the Huffington Post with the headline, "Climate Change Hits Women Harder, So Where Are the Feminist Voices?" The author of that article is Anousheh Hossain. She's the founder and editor of the website Anousheh's Point. Anousheh is a policy analyst focusing on the impact of U.S. foreign policy on the health and rights of women and girls. And she joins us now by phone. Anousheh, welcome to Women's Magazine.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
So let's start with your article in the Huffington Post. And what motivated you to write that article?
Well, I've kind of been following this issue for about a year now. And it actually started because I had a project that I had to do for work. And initially, I was kind of hesitant to get involved because I was like, I don't really know what the issue of climate change is, how it affects women. But I felt like leading up to the talks, which are currently going on in Copenhagen right now, there was an increase of articles in the press speaking about, specifically speaking about the gendered impact of climate change. And I just found it really fascinating. And the question that I had eventually became the title for my article, which was Climate Change Hits Women Harder, So Where Are the Feminist Voices? I still have that question. I just think it's, you know, shocking, the fact that the climate change talks, which are going on now in Denmark, it's such a big deal. This conference is a United Nations conference, and the gender angle of climate change is not even a part of the agenda there. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's not enough women at the decision-making table. I think that's always an issue. I think even though, you know, more and more women are getting into increased positions of, you know, policy making and decision making positions, I think that that's one aspect of it. But I also think the bigger aspect of it is the fact that the women's movement in the U.S. and around the world hasn't really taken this issue on. I don't think we've really made it our issue. I think we need to make more noise around it.
Why do you say that climate change hits women the hardest?
That's not an opinion of mine. That's actually a fact. And, you know, from what I've been reading and what I've been seeing, there, I feel like the connections are really clear. And there was an excellent toolkit, a resource kit is what they're calling it, that came out from, it was a combined effort with WEDU, which is the Women's Environment Development Organization, and the United Nations Population Fund, which is UNFPA. They did this joint toolkit, and it's called Climate Change Connections, Gender and Population. And when I read it, it really makes the case really well, makes a very strong case, and kind of connects the dots and really lays out all of the connections. And once I saw that, I was just like, there's so much proof, and there's such scientific backing of the fact that there is of the gendered impact of climate change. Basically, a lot of the traditional domestic responsibilities which fall upon women and girls is a large factor in why climate change is having a disproportionate effect on them. I quote this in my article, but I really think the United Nations Population Fund puts it, articulates it right on when they say that women are the ones who cook, clean, and farm for their families, in addition to providing health and hygiene. So basically, a lot of the agricultural roles that women have are, you know, make their connection to the environment and the changing environment, the impact on them, much stronger.
You talk about some of the ways that climate issues impact women's and girls' lives. Can you talk some about that?
Yes. I mean, what I found especially fascinating when I was reading up on this issue was the case of water. You know, that's a natural resource which is especially sensitive to climate change. Traditionally, women are the primary managers of water in their households. And I was reading the fact that women have to travel anywhere to 10 to 15 kilometers a day to gather water for their families. The United Nations estimated that takes about 8 hours a day. And when women need help with household chores, they don't pull their sons out of school. They pull their daughters out of school. So because of this, because of the distances that women have to walk to literally access clean water, water for their homes and water for their families, millions of girls are unable to go to school.
You grew up in Bangladesh, and in the article you mentioned that you saw firsthand a lot of the impact of what we've now come to call climate change. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes, I mean, it was really funny because I was reading all these, you know, educational materials on these on this issue and reading all these articles, and I kind of just sat back when this article was kind of coming to me, and I was thinking about when we were growing up back home in Bangladesh. I mean, we just always had floods and cyclones, and every year we have our monsoon rains, and they kind of turn roads into rivers and make lakes out of our rice paddy fields. But I was kind of having these flashbacks of what it was like growing up. And now, you know, a lot of experts are kind of holding on to the case of Bangladesh as not only a concrete example of the impact of climate change. I mean, this country is pretty much sinking. And I remember, like, when we were growing up and when we were kids, like, hearing about this, you know, that apparently in 20 years, Bangladesh was going to be completely underwater. And today, it's not, you know, just like what you're hearing in the playground anymore. It's actually happening. But what really hit home for me is about Bangladesh, because it's not only sinking, but it's also one of the poorest countries in the world. But that's exactly who climate change is going to hit the hardest first. It's the world's poor who's going to feel the impact of this change the hardest. And the fact of the matter is 65% of the world's poorest populations are women.
So did you see evidence of the gendered impact of climate change personally in Bangladesh?
Well, yes. In our fishing villages, a lot of the men are fishermen, and so they're away for a large part of the year. And it's the women who are kind of taking charge of everything at home. And so when the cyclones and the floods hit, it's the women that kind of have to gather their families, get them into the cyclone shelters. I think a lot of aid agencies are working with women to kind of build their homes and keep their homes on like higher plateaus, teaching the women how to secure these shelters because they're the ones who are at home.
So there are actually a lot of women doing work on climate change. The UN Development Program has an entire website devoted to gender and climate change. What are some of these groups doing? You mentioned that women have a lot of innovative and creative ideas about how to address climate change. Can you talk about some of those? And then, given that there are all these women doing important and innovative and exciting work, why do you feel that their voices aren't being heard enough?
I feel like the environmental groups have really taken this issue on, and they're the ones who are educating us about it. My point is that the gendered impact of climate change is so clear, it's a women's rights issue. I don't think it should be just environmental groups that should take this on. I mean, I feel like it's a job for advocates. And when you look at what women's rights advocates have done to kind of, you know, bring attention and focus on issues such as violence against women, on women's health, I feel like we need to do the same with the climate change issue. And I think people are kind of scared to touch it because they think, oh, you know, I'm not an environmentalist, I'm not a specialist. But my point is, if we don't take this issue on and bring attention and focus to it, nobody else will. I think the fact that the gender aspect of this issue is not a part of the Copenhagen conference, I think that speaks volumes. I think the women's rights movement haven't done a well enough job, a good enough job of articulating this issue.
Can you talk about some of the innovative ideas that you noticed that women were putting forward when you were doing your research?
the International Aid Agency. They're working with women to develop, and this is happening in Bangladesh, you know, floating villages, clinics on boats. What I really wanted to say in the article and what my point was that these are the people we need to hear from, the women out in the field, the women in the villages. I mean, forget about the women who may or may not be at the decision-making table. We need to go directly to the source, the women that are having these experiences, these intimate experiences with the environment changing, with, you know, these millions of girls who are not being able to go to school. We need to go to them and ask them what we need to do. We need to bring more women into the fold, and then we can have more innovative ideas on how to combat climate change. Women are not only the victims and one of the main victims of climate change, but they're also the agents of change. I read that, I think, in the UNFPA toolkit, and I really like that.
I think one of the concerns is, okay, so now everybody's suddenly paying a lot of attention to climate change for these 2 weeks, and then what? You know, what do you intend to do to make sure that this issue doesn't fall away in terms of the women's movement?
Well, I think for my part, I'm going to keep writing about this as much as I can. But I was reading the other day about, I think, NASA, like, thinking about putting mirrors in space to deflect the sun's rays and, you know, all these crazy billion-dollar projects. And I think it's so simple that all you really have to do is listen to women, trust women, invest in women's rights. I really think that that's the largest solution for pretty much every single problem we're facing in the world today, you know, from food shortage to global food insecurity to wars to development in general. Just invest in women, invest in women's health. But I also think people kind of think climate change is, they don't really know much about it. They might think it's kind of like boring. They don't really want to hear about it. And I used to be one of those women. I kind of got involved because, you know, the project came to me at work. Nobody else was really taking it on. But I think that where we are right now in the world and what point we've come to, I mean, we cannot afford to ignore this issue any longer. And I cite this article in my piece for the Huffington Post, but I mean, I read in the LA Times about how the newest kind of refugee in the world is not from war, but it's from climate change. They're called climate refugees, and there's about 10 million people around the world who have been forced to leave their homes because of climate change, rising or falling sea levels, desertification, lack of rain. I mean, I think this is astounding.
And yeah, I really did not know that. I found that shocking.
I did not know that either. And I think that's shocking. Can you imagine? And people are still debating if this issue is real or not.
I think you make a good point that I think a lot of us, of women, activists are afraid of issues that we think have too much to do with science, and that
exactly.
has to do with how we're educated and how we're taught to think about ourselves
exactly.
and our inability to handle science. And I know I sort
exactly.
of started my activist career many years ago in the anti-nuclear movement, and there was a lot of that same thing. A lot of us felt like, oh, well, we couldn't really speak well about the nuclear freeze issue because we didn't understand all the science of how you make a nuclear reaction. The point you're making is that we really have to understand that this is a social issue and not
exactly.
primarily a science issue.
Well, you know, and a lot of that, I mean, even I'm guilty of that. When you called me for the interview, you know, one of the first things I said was, well, I'm not a specialist on the environment. But, you know, later on when I was going back and thinking after I spoke to you, I was like, this isn't, yes, of course it's a science issue. There's a huge scientific aspect to this issue, of course. But what it's becoming is a human issue.
What sources would you recommend for women who want to start educating themselves about this issue?
I think one of the best things to do, really, is to go online and get this resource kit. It's called Climate Change Connections. It's a resource kit that's put together by UNFPA, the United Nations Population Fund, and WeDo, Women's Environment Development Organization. If you go to www.wedo.org, I think that's a great way to get involved. They not only have toolkits, but they have a lot of actions that you can take and a lot of ways that you can kind of get involved in this issue.
Well, I'll definitely be looking for your future writings about this issue.
I promise that I'm going to be keeping on writing about this issue, so make sure to follow my blog. I'm not going to forget about climate change.
And we'll, of course, be linking to Anousheh's blog, Anousheh's Point, on our blog, which is kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com. Anousheh Hossain, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about this really critical issue.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Kate.